Well, good morning to you, and it's lovely to be back in Mac again. It's a long time since I've been here. I don't know how many years, and lots of you won't even know who I am, which is great. I do remember going on a weekend with you once to Brunel Manor. That's how long ago it was. I don't exactly remember what we spoke about, but anyway, we had a great time together. I remember that. And it's lovely to meet up with some old friends, friends who I have known for many, many years. Some I've worked with, John, in all kinds of situations, both in teaching and also in the rallies. Do you remember the rallies? And lots of you will remember those days. It's good, really, to be back here with you as a slightly older man than I was the last time I came. There we are. We have 14 grandchildren. That gives you some idea of how well we have done. And you might be shocked to know we also have 4 great-grandchildren now. So I'm well able to talk about this man. You see, one of the great things about Genesis chapters 12, 13, and the continuing is that they start off with an old man. Isn't that good? I mean, the guy's 75, for goodness sake, when he starts really doing something for the Lord. What an encouragement that is. Not to you young ones, but to us older ones. It's a fantastic encouragement that there's still life left after you are 75. And God can still use you remarkably. One of the things that I love is that God has called us recently into something a bit new. And it's great to be continually called. You don't get called just once in your life by God to do something. He continually keeps on calling you, as he did with Abraham. And I want to pick some of that up today as we go through. Chapter 13, of course, is the sequel to chapter 12. The two chapters really fit together perfectly well. And they do so for 2 reasons. 2 important words come through to us from that. And those words are the word Lord and the word land. You'll have noticed that God is always called the Lord in chapter 12 and chapter 13. It will change from that as you move into chapter 14 and onwards. Worth looking out for as you go through. The Lord, of course, is the one who is the ever-existing one. In New Testament terms, he's the one who heaven cries in Revelation chapter 4, verse 8, and says who was and is to come. That's really the meaning of the word the Lord, the ever-existing one. I always like to think of it like this. He's the God who was, so he knows my past. It's good knowing a God who knows my past, who knows what has gone on up until this moment. He's the God who will be. He's the God who is and the God who will be. He's the God who knows my future. He plans my future. My future is like yours, is uncertain. I don't know what's going to happen. But he does. And that's why he's the God who is now, so I love him for the present. I can trust him because he knows my past. He's planned my future, so I can trust him now at this moment. And Abraham lived in that moment as he trusted the Lord. But the Lord sent him to the land. The land would be his territory, his plot, the place he had been given, the gift from God. I don't know what your land might be. But I'm praying that today we will find a little bit more about that particular land. And you'll see it coming right the way through chapter 12. You won't mind if I just do this with you. They set out for the land of Canaan. Abraham travelled through the land as far as the great tree of Moreh. At that time, the Canaanites were still in the land, so the land was a bit crowded. And then, of course, the Lord appeared to him and said, to your offspring, I'm going to give this land, which is a great thing to say to somebody like me, because I've got 4 offspring and loads of other offspring from those offsprings, but he didn't have any. We've had 2 great-grandchildren living with us for the last 10 days. I can tell you, I've struggled by the end of it. We have gone to bed at 9 o'clock. I mean, we're early bedders, but that's ridiculous. At 75, to have little ones hanging around, that's hard. Rewarding, wonderful, joyful, but hard. And he didn't have any at all, and he's 75. And God says to him, I'm going to give you lots of offspring. So God had given him the land. The problem is, as you learned last week, I assume last week anyway, was that having tried to get down to the land, going through the land and looking at the land, there's a famine in the land. What do you do when there's a famine? Well, really, if you're walking with God who's given you the land, you stay in the land. But he didn't. As you learned last week, he went down to Egypt because the famine was severe down there, which brings us really into our particular chapter. How do you recover it after you have gone into the wrong place? The one thing I love about God, well, it's not the one thing, it's one of the many things I love about God, is that for him, failure's never terminal. He doesn't give up on you. Isn't that amazing? If failure was terminal, I would not be here this morning. But praise his name, he loves to pick up failures and to use them all over again. And really, that's where we're going to in our particular chapter. I've put up there a picture. The backdrop is the plains of Moree, what it looks like today. It didn't look like that in Abraham's time. It would have been covered with tents rather than covered with those houses. But one of the consequences of him going down into Egypt was that he and his partner Lot, who'd gone with him everywhere, his nephew actually, they'd gone everywhere together, decided it was time to go their separate ways. And it appears that it was a little acrimonious, certainly at the very beginning. So that's where we shall be going as we go through this particular chapter. But I want to talk first of all about how he came back. How do you come back to the Lord when you've left the Lord? When perhaps just for a moment or two, maybe for a day or two, maybe for a week or two, maybe for a month or two, maybe for a year or so, your heart has gone away from the Lord and you're not close to him. Maybe there's some folks here today who don't really know the Lord. Well, how do you get to know the Lord? How do you come back to him? I want just to mention three things that come up in our chapter pretty obviously at the very beginning. And here's the first one. He burnt bridges. This is what it actually says. So Abraham went up from Egypt to the Negev with his wife and everything he had, and Lot went with him. There are three things to notice. He went up. He'd gone down to Egypt. He went up. He now goes up to the Negev. The Negev is the desert part of Israel. Just imagine that now. He'd come from the Nile Delta, no doubt. It was a lush place. There was plenty of greenery around. And now he says, I'm leaving all of that behind. I'm going up to the desert. I'm going up to Negev. And sometimes life feels a bit like that, doesn't it? It feels better to go away from God and from his people into stuff that seems better. Let me tell you, what seems better never is. The best place to be, bar none, the best place, always, every single time, is to be where the Lord is. Always. And he went up. Even though the Lord might be in the desert, he was going up there to meet with the Lord. And he did that. What he did was he took his wife with him. You have to do that, of course. If you're a husband, you have to take your wife with you. Just learn that simple lesson and you'll find marriage very much happier. Go take your wife with you. Go together in the matter. Be together. And we've been married 52 years and it's just remarkable how much we have been able to do together that we could not do separately. He took his wife, but he also took everything he had. He didn't leave anything behind in Egypt. He didn't think to himself, it might be nice to have a breakdown here from time to time. Why don't we get a little holiday let or something down in Egypt so that we can go back there? He burnt his bridges completely. He left it and decided, now I'm never, ever going to go back to that place. And that's exactly what he did for the rest of his life. In 2002, my wife and I, Sandra, we left. I used to teach in Whitchurch and she was a secretary there. And I gave up teaching and decided to go full-time into Christian ministry. The scariest thing is at the end of September of the year that we gave up, I didn't get any salary. Well, I wasn't teaching, so why should I? There was nothing in the bank that particular September. And it's a scary thing to do. And in the back of my mind, I guess I thought to myself, well, never mind. I could always go and be a supply teacher if necessary. I guess I'd thought about that. But before I left, I decided I'll never do that. Whatever happens, if the Lord's called me to this ministry, he will see me through it. So I gave away all my teaching notes that I gained over 30 years. Every single one of them, I gave them away to a colleague and said, if you want to use these and you think you can use these, he had that glint in his eye that said, whoa, thank you. And he was quite a young teacher, and he had a whole set of notes to use, because I wanted to say, I'm finished with that, and I move on to this. Sometimes God calls us to do that, to move on from where we are and determine we'll never go back there. That's what he did. The first thing he did was to come lock, stock, and barrel. The next thing he did was to retrace his steps. From the Negev, he went from place to place till he came to Bethel. Some of you will immediately pick up that Bethel, which you might have learnt last week, means the house of God. It wasn't actually called Bethel at that time. It didn't get called that till later on in Genesis. But it was the place where he last met with God. He went to Bethel, the house of the Lord. Wherever the Lord is the place for you to be. Always the place for you to be. Church is not really the house of God. The people themselves form the house of God. But the house of God is the place where God lives. And if you live with God, then God lives with you. Then that's your Bethel. And he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, or however you pronounce that name, which means a heap of ruins. He left the heap of ruins to get to the place where God was, the place where his tent had been earlier. We learn that in chapter 12, which I wanted just to pick up on, because we're going to say something at the end that might be helpful to those of you who are students of the Bible. From there on, he went towards the hills, east of Bethel, says chapter 12 and verse 8, and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. He'd already been there. He came back to the place where he last met with God. If you're running away from God, if you're going away from God, if your heart's away from God and you want to come back to the place where you last met with God, amongst the people who you last met with God with, come back to them. That's what he's calling us to do today. And the third thing that he did to recover the lost ground was he renewed relationship with God. And I love this particularly. He came back to Bethel and Ai, where he had first built an altar. An altar, of course, is the place where you worship. I've been challenged by this week. How much do I worship God at home? Sometimes I sing songs. How much do I really worship him? How much do I worship him when I come to church? Or when we take bread and wine together, have we done it so many times that we don't even stop to say thank you for it? How much does our heart pour out in worship to God? Worship is the outflow of my soul, of what I'm really feeling inside. You can nearly always tell, you can probably guess this from the way I preach, you can nearly always tell how I am because of the way I'll speak, because of what I'll say, how enthusiastic, how wonderful I will say something is. The worship's the outflow of our soul. How much do we bubble over with the Lord? When was the last time you kind of remember the hair standing up on the back of your neck and you said, whoa, what a God we've got? He came and he came to the altar, and there he called on the name of the Lord. Now, it's an interesting thing that there are three things that are interesting. Number one, he called on the Lord. The word means to proclaim. It's kind of what I'm doing here today. Proclaiming. You're probably getting it loud and clear. And that's what he did. He called on the name of the Lord. He publicly, in that particular space, I don't know who was there, other than his rather large family. I don't know who was there, but he called out to the name of the Lord. Now, he didn't just call to the Lord. He did call to the Lord who is the ever-existing one, the Lord who knows his past, who's planned his future, and is with him in the present. He didn't just call out to the Lord. He called out in the name of the Lord. And you might think that that's insignificant. The name of the Lord, that title, the name of the Lord, indicates who he really is, his personality, his characteristics, the kind of Lord he really is. Abraham had come to know the kind of Lord he is. And out of that relationship that he had with him, he called out to the Lord, knowing that the Lord would hear him. There's a verse in the New Testament that Jesus, talking to his disciples in the upper room, says to them, you may ask anything in my name and I will give it to you. That doesn't mean you can just ask for anything you fancy. Go to the Lord and say, Lord, I want a Rolls Royce in the name of Jesus. You're not going to get it. And I'll tell you why. Because the name of the Lord is the character of who the Lord is. When I was a kid, and I wanted some things for Christmas. I wrote them on a list. I never wrote anything outlandish or stupid because I knew my parents couldn't do it. They wouldn't have had the money to be able to do it. I wrote down things that I guessed would be achievable. Sometimes I got that wrong, but at least I guessed them close to it because I know them. I know their name and what their name meant. And that's what he did here. He comes and he calls on the name of the Lord, believing and trusting in who he is and what he can do. He came to him and he called out the name of the Lord. Well, our verse says he did it where he had first built an altar. And we go back to chapter 12 again, and this is what it says. He built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. That's what he had already done. He's now gone down into Egypt. He comes back up out of Egypt. And the first thing he does is to say, let's get to the place where we meet with the Lord in the house of the Lord. And let's get to an altar and let's worship the Lord all over again. I want my heart daily to be warmed by the Lord. I want to love him more each day. I've been a Christian for very, very many years, 70 at least. And every day I want to get excited about Jesus, don't you? That's where Abraham was. He came back to the place where the Lord was. Of course, when you come back, everything's going to be rosy again, isn't it? Everything's going to be wonderful. It's going to be easy from now onward. I've drifted away from the Lord. I've come back to him. Now it's going to be easy. Even if I am in the Negev, which is the desert, he wasn't. He'd moved up into the much greener hills of Judea. But it's going to be easier. At least you might think it was. But the problem was that the very first thing that happened when he got into that land was there was a dispute. I don't know if you've ever been in a dispute. Oh, of course you have, you're human. I'd forgotten about that just for the one moment. Every one of us will have had some dispute or other at some time or another. And very frequently those disputes tend to be quite close to home, as this one particularly was. But I want to say something before we look at how he actually dealt with the dispute itself. I want to say something about God's calling. This is what we have learned. We learned it from verse 2 of our particular chapter. So Abraham went up, verse 1, sorry. Abraham went up to the Negev and Lot went with him. We picked that up in chapter 12 as well. This is what it says in that particular place. So Abraham went as the Lord had told him and Lot went with him. Every time he says, and Lot went with him. Now he says, Lot, who was moving about with Abraham. Yeah, we get the message, Lord. He was with Abraham. The difference between Lot and Abraham was Abraham had had a call from the Lord. Leave and go. That's what God had told him. Lot seemed to grab hold of his uncle's coattails and get dragged along with it. He went with him. No sense of call, no sense of priority, no sense of the Lord. He never prayed to the Lord as far as we know, not until he got into the worst situation that you're going to learn about when you should eventually get to chapter 19. See, God had said to Abraham, I want you to go. I want you to do something for me. He had called him. Now, I don't know why you came to Mac this morning. Good question to ask yourself. Are you here because you like the church? I hope you do. That would be good, wouldn't it? To be amongst friends and people you like, and you like some of the things that go on here. Maybe it's because you live close by and you think, well, this is a lovely church to be going to. The best reason to come here is because God has called you to come here. Given you a purpose and a reason. Because if you're called, you'll throw yourself in unreservedly into the life of the church. Abraham was called by God to go to the land. Just a year ago, Sandra and I were called away from the church we were in to another church in Cardiff. It's a new church plant. It's called Grace Canton. 14 people left Grace Grangetown to set up a new church in Grace Canton. We actually meet in what was Leckwith Gospel Hall in the afternoons on a Sunday. Well, we meet during the week as well. We felt God really calling us to go there. And Sandra and I just said, we need to go. And we kind of looked at each other and thought, we're not so young as we used to be. Is really God calling us? I mean, one of the pulls is that it's led by my granddaughter and her husband, That makes a difference, of course. For those of you who might know Chloe, it's Nathan and Chloe, and they've got two little ones. So we do see them every week, but we just felt God impelling us, pushing us in things that he said, in things that others said, to go there. And we felt the call of God. And when you get the call of God, you just have to go and do what he calls you to do. Now, Abraham had got that call, but Lot hadn't. And that really informs what happens as we go through this story. There were family tensions. The land could not support them while they'd stayed together, for their possessions were so great, they were not able to stay together, and quarreling arose between Abraham's herders and Lot's herders. Now, just to put it into perspective, I'm just going to jump forward into the next chapter for one brief comment. Abraham had at least 300 men who could fight. Oh. So we're not just thinking about a little family in a tent down by the Gower. We're not in that kind of place. We're in a tented village. 300 men. It doesn't tell you how many women there were there. You imagine the size of this great, huge, tented village that moved around a little bit from place to place. Add to that Lot's family and everybody who goes with them, and you have now got such a big place that the land there cannot manage to support them. In other words, the sheep and the goats and the cows and whatever else they might have had didn't have enough pasture land. They had to go in different directions to different places. That was what it was about. And there was quarreling that arose over that. You can just imagine it, can't you? We were here first. You take your flocks somewhere else. Because that's how petty we as human beings frequently are. How do you deal when there's tensions in the family, whatever they might be? Well, here's the first thing that I seem to notice that the historian records for us, that there was a world out there who might also be watching. The Canaanites and Perizzites were living in the land at that time. Now, he could have written that for two reasons. One is, Lot and Abraham's herders had to share the pasture land and give space for the Canaanites and the Perizzites. I don't think that's the reason why he put it there. For after all, God says, I'm giving you this land. This is your land. This is your land. This is your land. The Canaanites and Perizzites will have to move over. I think the reason why he said it was because he had just been calling out to the name of the Lord so that people around, including the Canaanites and the Perizzites, could hear him calling out to the Lord. What does it do to the name of the Lord when we as his people, as brothers and sisters, can't get on together? What does it do? And that's why I've called it the world was the watching world. He didn't allow the argument to go on because he knew that there were folks outside who might see and therefore dishonor the name of his God. But here's the second reason. Because he wanted to teach Lot a better way of going. I've called it a humble solution. He stood and said, let's not there be quarreling between you or me or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. They weren't brothers, but that's the word that's actually used. They were relatives, but they were brothers in the sense that they'd stood together, that they'd walked together, that they'd fought together, they had been together in every situation, they'd traveled together through all the difficulties and heartaches of that. We're brothers. If only in churches somebody had stood up and said that more frequently, maybe we might have had less disagreements. One way of dealing with the problems that we have within our families, within our churches, within our businesses, whatever it might be, is standing up and saying, hey, there's a problem here. Why don't we deal with that problem? And then he says this, is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left. Let's go in opposite directions. Now, he's a man of 75. I have no idea how old Lot was. We're not told, but he was definitely a younger man. Of that, there's no question. And he should, therefore, by age and experience, had the priority. He could have stood up and said, I know more about this stuff than you do. Now, just listen to me. This is what we're going to do. This is the way forward. But he doesn't. He stands back and says, It doesn't matter what you take, what land you decide you're going to go to. I know God, and God has planned my future. And I'm finding huge comfort in that as I am moving into, well, definitely the last quarter of my life. Who knows whether it's the last tenth of my life? I have no idea. But I do know this, that He knows my future. He knows my future, and I know I'm secure with Him. Whatever time I've got here on earth at this present moment, I know I have a wonderful, glorious, grand future in heaven, 1,000,000 times better than anything I could ever have down here. And until that moment, He will keep me and give me the strength and give me the power and give me the passion and give me the authority and give me the right words to say. I know He's going to do that. So Abraham says, it's okay, you choose whatever you like. And I want to just question just for a moment, how do we make decisions? On what basis do we make decisions? How do you make choice if you're Lot? This is what Lot did. He looked around and saw. I don't know, but I guess they're standing on some kind of mountain and they're looking out. He saw the whole plain of the Jordan towards Zoar, that it was well watered. That meant there was plenty of water there, so everything would grow well. And if you are a primitive kind of farmer, you would need to have somewhere to grow your crops, somewhere to take your cattle. So he saw that and thought, wow, great place to go. And he says two things about it. It was like the garden of the Lord. I'm assuming he's talking about the Garden of Eden, though how he got to know about the Garden of Eden, I don't know, probably because somebody had told him down through the centuries it had been passed on till this particular time. And he sees it as the Garden of the Lord. Maybe he calls it the Garden of the Lord because it helped him a little bit. His unspiritual spirit might have just been helped along by saying, oh, actually, the Lord sent me there. When really it was the well-watered plain that he saw with his own eyes. Because to me, the Garden of the Lord and the land of Egypt shouldn't be in the same sentence, certainly not in the same phrasing. What he saw was what he'd seen down in Egypt. If he hadn't gone to Egypt in the first place, he would never have been able to see that this land was just like Egypt. And Abraham came out of Egypt unscathed himself because he came back to the Lord. But unfortunately, the consequence was that Lot saw Egypt and thought, like to live there. And that's where he chose, because he saw it. His decision was based upon his own thinking. So Lot chose for himself. He did it for selfish reasons. I wonder why we make choices and the decisions that we make. How are they empowered? Lot's decision, of course, has consequences. And here's the consequence. Abraham lived in the land of Canaan, but Lot lived among the cities of the plain near Sodom. The people of Sodom were wicked and sinning greatly against the Lord. My son used to live in London. He decided one day, even though he still works a lot in London, that he would move to just outside Bridgend, into a nice little village in the Vale of Glamorgan. And it was very pleasant and very lovely. And he loves to live there. And his reason for doing it was because he didn't want his children to go to school in that part of London where they lived. Oh, I kind of get that. Because the circumstances in which we are affect how we live. And he chose to go to a place that was very evidently sinful because they sinned greatly against the Lord. It wasn't just that they sinned. I don't know the difference between sin and sinning greatly, but very evidently the Spirit of God does, because he put it there on the page. And he says that the people were wicked. And the consequence of him moving there was he was cheek and jowl with sin, with evil, with wickedness, which will have its consequences in the future. And although it might in the present, at the particular time for a short period, seem to be really good, the future will be bleak. And that's what it was. When you make decisions by looking round and seeing, choosing for yourself and not taking into account the spiritual darkness that you are going into. How did Abraham make a choice? Abraham's decision is interesting. It comes of constant discussion. The Lord said to Abraham. Chapter 12, twice over, verse 1, the Lord had said to Abraham, go. Verse 7, the Lord appeared to Abraham and said. Verse 7 of chapter 12 is the last time the Lord spoke with Abraham until this time. In between, he's been down into Egypt. He's come back up out of Egypt. Now the Lord's speaking to him again. I wonder how often the Lord speaks to you. Can I give you a personal experience? Because I sometimes think this helps. Just this week, and I want to say thank you to allow me to come here to speak on this subject. Just this week when I was preparing this, the Lord said to me, in our church in Grace Canton, we started off with 16 people. We lost three within 2 months. Three workers. One got married, how dare he, and moved away. The other two got a job in a different part of the country. They've moved to Coventry, which is where we have now sent them. But they've moved out, and you kind of think to yourself, what are you doing, Lord? You've called us to this place, and it's getting smaller, not bigger. And the Lord just said to me, you've just got to trust me on this. You've got to trust me on this. On this particular case, I'm coming and I'm going to speak to you and I'm going to tell you that I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to bless you. And it may not be immediate and you may not see the troubles, the glory, the blessing straight away. You will go through troubles. You will go through heartaches. There will be difficulties. You will have your Egypt days. You will have your Negev days. You will have time when there's going to be strife. But I'm with you and I'm going to bless you. And the Lord spoke to me to encourage me to say, keep going, keep going, keep going. Don't think of going back. The Lord said to Abraham, I want to know what the Lord says to me every single day. Now, I don't know what you do with your days, but will you find time in a day? If you've ever heard me speak, you'll have heard me say this before. Will you take a time in the day to get and speak to the Lord? I find getting up early works. Just a little early, just so you can speak to the Lord. You can read his word and say, Lord, what are you calling me to do this day? The Lord said to Abraham, he kept on speaking to him. It was constant discussion. Not only so, but he gave him a continuing promise, a promise that he'd said before. See what happens. Lift up your eyes. Lift up your eyes. Lot looked and saw for himself. God did the looking for Abraham. Look, lift up your eyes from where you are. North, south, east, and west. You can't go any further in any direction than that. All the land that you see, I'll give it to you. It's yours. Hold on to the promise and to your offspring forever. And he repeats that and says, I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth. Could you possibly believe God for something like that when you're 75 years old and haven't got any kids? Remarkable that you ever could possibly believe that they would be enough to be like the dust of the earth and you can't even count them. Then your offspring should be counted. He held on to the promise of God. And let me tell you too, God then said to him finally, I want you to go walking through the length and breadth of the land. Take the promise and walk through the land. Keep going, for I'm giving it to you. So Abraham went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron, where he pitched his tent. There he built an altar to the Lord. Abraham marked out the territory of his land with altars. Everywhere he went, there were altars. You could never, ever pass through that land without knowing there was somebody here who worshipped the Lord, and his name was Abraham. He walked throughout the land. I just wanted to say quickly as we close, there's a map of the land that he walked through. He came into this place called the Plains of Moriah up in Shechem. And then he comes down to Bethel and Hai. Then he comes down to the plain, to Egypt. Then comes back out of Egypt and comes to Bethel and Hai again. And then he comes back down to the plain of Mamre. And that is the story of chapter 12 and 13. Very typical, actually, of the way Hebrews write. Hebrew scholars write in this particular way. You start off here in the land. You start off in the place, you go down into Egypt, you come back up exactly the same way, retracing your steps until finally you get back to the place where God called you to be.